shalom does not mean we all have to agree, but it does mean we have to have chesed. Are we going to treat each other with kindness?
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org, elmad.pardes.org.
Okay, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of This Pardes Life, where I have the privilege, my name is Tzvi Hirschfield, which it was the same name as last time, and I have the privilege of learning today with my friend and colleague, Rabbah Yaffa Epstein, who is currently the Director of Education for Pardes in North America and doing lots of exciting things and getting her Torah out there and bringing people to hear. And it's really a privilege to learn with you today. Welcome back to your home in Yerushalayim. What are you going to learn with us today?
Thank you so much, Rabbi Hirschfield. It is a privilege and an honor to be here back in the Pardes Beit Midrash. So I thought that we would take a look at one of my favorite pieces of Torah, which is from Bereishit Rabbah, which is Genesis Rabbah 8:5. And it's actually a Midrash on the issue or question of when God says in Genesis, Na'aseh Adam, let us make man, which is, you know, caused quite a hullabaloo among the commentaries and the rabbis, because what does it mean that God is saying, let us? Who's the us? Isn't there only one God? And the rabbis very quickly and skillfully explain that even though, of course, God didn't have to, before God created the human being, God chose to take counsel with the angels. And this midrash is based on that concept. So we're told here, I'm a Rabbi Simon. Rabbi Simon said, at the time when God came to create the first human being, the angels formed themselves into groups, right? Or sects, right? Groups of groups, right? This group said, don't create the human being, and some said, let's create the human being.
So right? At the very beginning of time, even before people, there's arguing. Absolutely. Arguing is built into the fabric of our universe. That's very encouraging. It makes me understand my family a lot more. Okay, good. Keep going.
I think it's actually really fascinating. Even the very creation of the human being comes out of a machloke, comes out of some sort of disagreement. Even though, of course, although I would really ask you about this, Tzvi, like, what do you think about this? But in a way, it's sort of interesting. Like, God did not have to invite the angels into this conversation. Why do you think that he did?
Well, that's a really interesting point. It's like, almost the very beginning, I could see this sort of positively as this idea of God already wants to engage from the very beginning. He wants partners. He wants dialogue. There's also the cynical part of me that's like, doesn't want to take all the blame for himself, right? In other words, if I don't let the board decide, which I don't do, of course, but I imagine would be very attractive. Mm-hmm. So if it doesn't go right, we could say, well, look, it wasn't just me. Right. It was us.
Right. And it's actually really, it's a really interesting point. Like, it's really not a simple thing to add the human being to the mix, right? Because once we add the human being, sort of the whole project is different. And we even see that from the very beginning of the human being's creation, right? Like, it takes them just a few hours to sin from the moment that he's created. So that's, I think, an interesting point, that it's not a simple thing. The human being's existence has never been simple, right? And in fact, we have a serious machloket, a serious disagreement here between the angels, right? And we're told about four specific angels based on a pasuk in Tehillim Pei Hei, right, on Tehillim 80, in Psalms 85, which says to us, Chesed ve'emet nifgashu, tzedek v'shalom nashaku, right? And it's interesting because the translation here is really different depending on whether you're reading it in its context in Tehillim or in this midrash, right? But it seems to be that chesed and emet, right, kindness and truth met each other, right, or had this encounter, tzedek v'shalom nashaku, right, that righteousness and peace have kissed, or some people understand this to mean not kiss, but actually fought, which is in and of itself a fascinating conversation about what nashaku can mean. Does it mean fighting or kissing, right? But From the very beginning, these four different values seem to be sort of locked into a battle together. Chesed says, yes, create him because he will eventually do good things. And Emet says, no, because kulosh karim, he's completely lies, right? Truth here seems to say the fact that the human being will come to lie means that the human being's very existence is lying. And kulosh karim is a very extreme, I think, this issue of he is completely lies, right? Like once you lie a little bit, it's over. And that I think is a really fascinating idea. And then Tzedek comes along and says, no, create the human being, right? Righteousness says, let him be created. Why? Because he will do some tzedakot. He will perform some righteous deeds. And Shalom says, no, don't create him. Because like, once again, to Kulei, he is completely ktata. He's completely fighting, right? Because he gets into fights every so often. Oh, that means he's going to be completely full of fighting.
So it seems that truth and peace here, like any amount of the opposite already is no good. In other words, you dilute this pure mixture with anything other than what it is, and everything automatically is discounted. So righteousness and kindness, if you do some of those things, that counts. Yeah. But I guess what we're saying is you can't be a little bit truthful, right, or even partially truthful, and you can't be a little bit or partially peaceful.
Right. It's an interesting point. I'm growing up, I had a specific teacher who used to say, "Not Yafa, 99% MS is still sheker," right? That 99% truth is still not 100% truth, and therefore is false. And it's something that sort of, as I would say, like I think about a lot. I think about that comment a lot. What does it mean that 99% truth is still lies? And is it really possible for any human being to be 100% truth? Or is it by definition? I think that what's interesting here is that Emet seems to be saying, by definition, it's impossible for the human being to ever be 100% truth, and therefore, better not to even create him in the first place.
And nobody argues with him, right? In other words, each of these claims are accepted as being accurate, right? No one ever says, no, that's not true. Mm-hmm. He's this or he's that in any direction. The claims stand on their own, so now God's going to have to figure out, okay, I've got four legitimate claims on the table here. What's God going to do? Right. Let's find out.
Okay, so what does God do? Ma'asa kadosh baruch hu, natal emet v'hishlicho la'aretz, right? He picks up truth and throws him to the ground, right? And the angels turn to God and they say, what? What are you doing? I can't believe you are embarrassing your chief of court, right? Taksis al tiksaya, right? This chief, it comes from it's actually a Greek word, and this idea of the chief, really it's a tax collector, but this chief of court, right? This person who is...
It's like the head officer kind of thing?
Right, exactly. The most important person in the court, and they're very, very upset. The angels are very upset by this because it's pretty shocking. It's a pretty shocking moment, I would say, right? Where God picks up the most important person in court, his chief advisor, and throws him out of heaven.
Well, it's also, it strikes me, it's ironic. First of all, they're losing one of their own. So it started out as, hey, let's take counsel and be democratic and bring in more voices. The one who said the wrong thing, wham, he's out of heaven. And the other piece of this that's very striking, of course, is this idea that of all things, right, if God doesn't stand for truth, what would God possibly stand for?
Right.
And this idea that somehow God is choosing human beings over truth is very striking. It's scary. Makes you wonder if we're worth it.
Right. I mean, I definitely think Emet would say we're not worth it. But it's interesting, actually, because in a way, it's sort of, I didn't think about this until just now, but I think it's an interesting question about is this an ultimate act of God's chesed? Right? God's saying, of course, what? You think I don't know that human beings lie? Of course they do, right? But let's look at what they can do. You know, it's interesting because chesed and tzedek here are both saying what the human being does, who gomel chesedim, right? Who oset tzedakot, right? That he does chesed and he does tzedakah. Like, it's true. Maybe in his essence, he's not 100% truth, but what he is, he has the capacity to bring to the earth, to do his behavior, right, brings more perhaps than his essence, if you will, right?
It's still, I like what you're saying, but it still opens up the question, why do you have to throw truth down? Like, God could just basically say, okay, it's two against two. I'm number five on this court, and I decide to create. Why do you think, why throw truth to the ground as opposed to just saying, I'm going to break the tie?
Right. So it's an interesting thing because here we are in heaven discussing what should be happening down on earth. And the idea, I think, of Emmet transversing heaven to earth, maybe Emmet needs to go through this growth process. Like in the same way that the human being lives on earth and we spend our lives trying to get towards heaven, more heavenly, more spiritual, more growth, it seems like Emmet has to do that same process, but heaven down, right? Heaven to earth as opposed to earth to heaven. And then, lo and behold, right, the conclusion here is Tale Emmet Min Haaretz, right? That actually truth will grow up from the ground. Hadehu Tichtiv, as it says in, once again, Psalm 85, right? Emet Me'eret Tzitzmach, right? V'tzedek Mishamayim Nishkof, right? That truth springs out of the earth and righteousness looks down from heaven, right? So Tzedek is up there looking down, being like, oh, hi, buddy, right? See you down there, right? You're going to be stuck down there trying always to get back into heaven. And that, I think, is a really interesting question. I'd love to hear what you have to say about this idea that truth is constantly trying to get back in. What do you think about that?
Well, it's a really interesting question. It's funny, when you said that, I didn't have that image of truth trying to make its way into heaven, but I had this idea of truth growing. In other words, it's up in heaven, maybe there is no growth. You just are what you are. But if you're on the ground, then you have this opportunity to grow. And maybe that's like a totally different life, to be something that grows from the ground as opposed to something that lives up in heaven. And I don't know, I'm starting to feel less bad for truth. First, when it was thrown to the ground, my image is like, ouch, that hurts. You know, he doesn't say he gently plants truth into the ground. He throws him into the ground. I'm thinking that sounds very painful. But then this image, I'm wondering what you make of that image of truth growing from the ground. Maybe it's not all so bad.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point. I think it's exactly the right punishment, quote unquote, for truth, because he is the extremist, right? He is all or nothing, right? If you lie a little bit, you're 100% lies. Kulo shkarim. So actually, part of the message from God is, no, you're going to go down to the earth and you're going to understand that truth exists in a context. Truth exists in an earthly, right? And you're going to learn that it's not all or nothing. You're going to constantly be growing and trying to better yourself or get back up here. Although there is at least one commentary that believes that really when we talk about Emet Tzitzmach Me'adama is actually God picking truth back up and putting him back into heaven. So that, I think, is sort of an interesting thing. But I like your read more, that he's constantly growing.
Well, what occurs to me based on what you just said is, so what happens to truth, do you think? First of all, is there no truth in heaven anymore? Mm-hmm. That's one thing that occurred to me. Mm-hmm. But also, you mentioned very interesting idea that truth is going to have to adapt to its context. So what does that mean, do you think? What does it mean the truth is going to grow? And does truth change? And if so, what about his claim that we're only 98% or 90% or 60%? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's I think one of the things that we are constantly asking ourselves in this world is, are we being truthful? Are we being authentic? You know, often when we talk to students, I don't know if you have this experience, but one of the questions
I don't talk to students.
one of the questions that we often get is, you know, well, if I only keep Shabbat this week and not next week, aren't I being hypocritical? You know, or if I only keep kosher when I'm in Israel, but when I get home, it's too hard. Isn't that hypocritical? And so I'm not being authentic. And I think that there's something problematic about, I mean, I totally understand the question, but I think it's interesting because we sort of have this all or nothing thing when it comes to Judaism and it comes to practice and it comes to, you know, every situation I have to be exactly the same. I have to always, you know, make sure that I'm either 100% Jewish or I'm not Jewish, you know. And this I think would be arguing for saying, no, it's really about making choices, you know. And even if you can't be 100% authentic all the time, doesn't mean you shouldn't try. It doesn't mean you shouldn't go mel chasadim. Like, try to do the behaviors that you can as you can. And yes, I definitely think that there's an argument here for contextualizing, the all or nothingness of Judaism, and that really from our very, very beginning, we've understood that there are different parts of ourselves, and we can be even kulo shkarim and still be gomel chasadim, right? We can still be lying, whatever that means, quote unquote, but not 100% truthful or, static in every situation, but we still have the capacity to do good things and to build in this world.
What is this saying, you think, though, about sort of competing truths? Like, I think something is true, but occasionally I found the Jew to my left or to my right has some bizarre notion that they actually have the truth and not me. Mm. And what do you think this text is saying about that experience of, on the one hand, thinking that you have the truth, but also being aware that other people think differently and also think they have the truth?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think one of the things I find really fascinating about this is that Emet and Shalom are arguing not to create the human being, right? I would have expected the opposite of Emet, truth, to be Shalom, peace, right? But actually the opposite of Emet is Chesed. I think this goes back to the pairs here, which I think is really fascinating, right? Like, Shalom is also saying, peace is also saying, don't create the human being because he will create fights and arguments. And somehow it's not worth it. It feels not worth it to create the human being because he's just going to cause problems and fight and cause animosity. And, I think that there's many times that we see that religious differences have caused a lack of shalom in the world. But God doesn't choose to throw shalom to the earth, which I think is sort of interesting. And why not? Why doesn't he pick up Emet and Shalom and throw them to the earth? And I wonder if this is like about the idea that, shalom does not mean we all have to agree, actually, right? Building community does not mean we have to agree, but it does mean we have to have chesed. Like, the opposite of truth and living together is not shalom. It's not peace. We're not going to all agree, and we're not even going to not fight. Like, it's okay. We're going to fight, but are we going to treat each other with kindness while we argue, while we disagree, while we live next to each other? How are we going to treat each other, I think, is the recipe here. What do you think about that?
I think it's a challenge, because what you're saying is we're always confronted, on the one hand, with what you said, truth does want to grow from the ground, and we should be truth aspiring. At the same time, we have to aspire for chesed, and yet they're opposites one another, so it seems that we're always caught in this, dynamic is the nice term, but I would say tension on the other of aspiring for truth and arguing with each other, perhaps, and at the same time being kind to each other. And the other thing I'm just noticing now is peace and truth don't really get to coexist either. Like, it's almost like they have to be in their separate corners. Mm. And there's something about that also that for me is a little overwhelming, a little frightening, that maybe they can't coexist. If we're all about truth, then we're not going to have peace. And if we're all about peace, then truth is going to have to be sacrificed. And I'm thinking about that as well. Unless there's some way the truth grows from the ground in such a way where it can meet peace somewhere and they can coexist. I guess what I'm most curious about is, I think you mentioned a lot of very powerful ideas. I'm curious as to how these play out in your life, like how this text is meaningful to you as a teacher, as a role model, as somebody who inspires people, as another human being struggling to figure out truth and chesed and peace.
The first time I read this piece, I was like, oh, thank God. It was such a sense of relief, like, okay, of course, God knows already that I'm kulo shkarim. Like, it's not even a question. Of course I have mistakes and fallacies. It's interesting, we're recording this right after Yom Kippur, and it just feels so real to me, right? Like, that from our very essence is that we're going to be full of, inconsistencies. That's the word I'm looking for, inconsistencies. And that's what it is to be a human being. And a man has no patience for that, no patience for inconsistencies. You have to be completely consistent all the time. And I definitely think that that is an image of Judaism that I have. When I think about the Yetzer Hara or Satan, right? Satan, like, and the evil inclination, like sitting on my shoulder. It's like this one specific idealized version of what it is to be a Jew. And I'm constantly measuring myself. But this Midrash, I think, is saying, what are you talking about? From our creation, God told us, from your creation, you are going to be inconsistent. And not only doesn't that prevent you from being created, it's actually maybe why you're created, right? You're actually maybe created to grow. That's all we can do on this earth is live, mess up, admit it, move on, right? Continue to grow, continue to own the fact that as human beings, we are in our very essence. And by the way, not only is our very essence kulo shkarim, completely false or inconsistent or, right, or constantly growing, but it's also gomel chasadim and oset tzedakot. Like, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, well, I can't be perfect, so I'm off the hook completely. Like, nope, you're on this hook. You are on this hook forever. And you're always going to have to be growing, and you're always going to have to be doing positive acts in this world, even as you walk the world in your imperfect, inconsistent state.
Well, I know that I have been told by many people that I am imperfect. I'm not so sure I'm ready to believe them yet, but it seems the evidence is mounting up that that's the case. And I think it's a very, I mean, again, I think this, you know, there's something about this text that's very moving and something almost a little scary that we're always going to be in this tension. We can't be everything all the time. And we're going to be compromising, you know, chesed in the face of truth, and truth in the face of peace, and we're always going to be in tension with these values, and they're not all going to speak in one voice. I think the fact that there are four different voices here up in heaven means that we're listening to these multiple voices all the time and trying to figure out what we're supposed to be doing, and it's not always so clear. And I guess truth growing from the ground for me has a sense of we're going to have to figure it out for ourselves, that there is no clear absolute instruction or rule book that's going to help us figure out how to be the kind of people we want to be and how to be the kind of Jews we want to be. So this feels like a lot of work. Do you have all this energy for all this work?
You know, it's interesting. As we were speaking, I was thinking also another interesting thing to think about in terms of Emet, what we're talking about, truth, is Torah. You know, there's an idea that Torah is Emet, and Emet is Torah. And that's a whole nother podcast probably, but I do think it's an interesting idea of what if we replace the word emet with Torah here, and that Torah will grow up from the ground, and that I do think it's a lot of work to constantly be in the struggle of growth and trying to bring more positivity and always balancing values. But I think we also have this other huge gift, which is the Torah. The Torah is our you know, guide to how to survive this existential struggling and existential choosing and balancing of values. We have this amazing emet of Torah that guides us, and which also we are charged with struggling with and understanding in the context of humanity. So I think that that's another way to think about how we can do this, is using the Torah and its values to continuously help us as we struggle through our existence.
And we have each other. We have our chavrutot in life who can argue with us and support us and give us help. So we're not all alone in this challenge.
Even God is not alone in the challenge.
There you go. Even God needed some help. Well, I am both reassured and challenged by this wonderful learning. Thank you very, very much, Yaffa, for all that you do for Pardes and for Am Yisrael, and for taking the time to learn with me today. And we look forward to future Chavrutot.
Thank you so much, Tzvi. It's always a pleasure and an honor to learn with you.
Thank you, and have a wonderful year. Happy, healthy year.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org, elmad.pardes.org.